Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Welcome in to the award-winning RotoWire Fantasy Basketball Podcast presented by FanDuel. It is Friday, December 22nd, 2017, for just another week here. DJ Trainer here, joined by Shannon McEwen and Ken K-Train Kreitz. You can follow us on Twitter, at TrainerDJ, at RotoShannon, and at Ken Kreitz. You probably already know this, but this podcast is available on iTunes and Stitcher. Feel free to leave a nice review on one of those venues. You know that we'd love to have it. Let's go over the topics for today. No surprises. We're going to go over some top news around the league. Then we're going to kick it into our broad topic of the day. We'll be talking rookie keeper rankings. I'm expecting all three of us to get a little feisty for that one. So if you could only keep one rookie for the rest of your dynasty league season, or dynasty league career, I guess, if we're going to create a fake league, which one would it be? We're going to spend a lot of time on the top five and then broadly talk about the next 15. Ken will give us his crazy old man rant, and then we'll kick it into our Friday FanDuel pick. So without further ado, Ken, why don't you lead us in some top news of the day?
Absolutely. We're going to start, sadly, at Madison Square Garden, where Michael Beasley blew up for 32 points off the bench, even though Porzingis did indeed start. And the Knicks beat up the suddenly very beatable Boston Celtics, 102-93. The Celtics are 4-5 over their last nine. Gentlemen, should we be getting on the Michael Beasley bus?
So I was at a Knicks game a couple weeks ago with some other industry folks, and they're playing Memphis, and Beasley comes in and he pours in 14 points in like 17 minutes. And I say to the two dudes sitting next to me, I say, Beasley is one of the five or so best scorers in the NBA. I'm like, I know he's not one of the best players or a legit MVP or anything like that, but I'm like, when he's on, he is one of the absolute best scorers in the league. And they looked at me like I was the dumbest person in the world. But these past couple weeks, I feel vindicated. Michael Beasley for MVP. He was receiving chants. The crowd was chanting him up last night. He poured in 32 points.
They were
points.
Chanting MVP, which is hysterical.
Out of the past three games, he's hit 32 points. The man is unstoppable.
Okay, let's get a nice bucket of cold water here for Shannon, and then I'll kind of soothe things over. I mean, you can you can go out there and pick up Beasley wherever you want. Like, you can make a case that you could pick him up, and even in the shallowest of leagues. Because if you think that he's going to continue on this trend, then he's completely valuable, even in the shallowest of leagues. But he's just one of those guys that has burned all of us. We have all utilized fab money on Michael Beasley, and I, for one, will not use any fab money on Michael Beasley this year. He will fizzle out at some point this year. That's just kind of what he does as an NBA player. I'm going to pass, and this is all just on my prior personal history with Sir Michael Beasley.
I don't disagree with that. He is worth a look in some formats. Over the past 13 games, Beasley's averaging 16.5 points, 5.7 rebounds. He doesn't do anything with assists, steals, or blocks, and he doesn't really hit three-pointers. But he can give you a decent field goal percentage and 15-16 points. That holds value in some leagues. Very few leagues, but he can give you some value.
How bad is the Timmy Hardaway injury? Is that getting Beasley also some minutes boost?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't hurt, right? In terms of usage, you would think that it was going to go, at least at the beginning of the season, to Porzingis, to Cantor, to Hardaway, and not much room for anybody else. But obviously that has not been the case. Courtney Lee has kind of stepped up and taken a lot of the scoring load so far this year, Shannon.
Yeah, I would just argue if it's Beasley, if you're looking for a short-term scoring punch, he's worth considering in like 14-team leagues. But you also, he's also the type of player that as soon as it ends, as soon as he gets his next DNP or something, just drop him. But at a short-term ad, sure, maybe.
You know what drove me crazy? He got 12 boards last night. I was like, we're being out-hustled by Michael frickin' Beasley. This is making me so mad.
If you're a first-time listener to the pod, Ken Kreitz is a Celtics fan, so that's why he opened the pod out with some sad Celtics, news and saying us when you're talking about the Celtics. Quick update on Tim Hardaway, since you asked, Ken. We at RotoWire do real-time individual player notes, and currently Tim Hardaway's note is unlike any I've ever seen since I've been here at RotoWire or reading RotoWire. Listen to this, guys. Hardaway, who's been dealing with a leg injury, has been cleared for, quote, little jumps in his rehab, but has yet to begin running. I have never
seen that. Who's the guy in charge? Who's the guy in charge of making sure he doesn't jump more than 6 inches? Right. Ah, stop.
Ruler on the ground. He got to 6 inches. Yeah, I've never seen that before. Little jumps.
We write almost 250,000 player notes a year, and I'll bet that's the first time we've ever used the phrase little jumps.
Little jumps.
20 years of player notes. 250,000 little jump.
I think that's hysterical, but kudos to him. So if you ask Ken, and the answer is specifically little jumps is where he's at in his recovery. I want to ask you, Ken, and Shannon, really. We have this big bet going on, and no surprise, listeners of the pod know that we bet on something almost every single podcast, but this is one of our bigger bets of the season. It's basically who's going to have more wins this season, the Celtics, who are Ken's favorite team, the Thunder, who are my favorite team, and Shannon got the Pistons, and we also gave you, what, 9 games?
Not like 12 games.
It was not 12 games. Yes. We'll go back and look at it, but it was a substantial amount of games. To begin the season, Ken and Shannon, you guys were looking great, and I was looking terrible, but I would argue that, you know, I'm kind of in a good spot right now where your teams are falling back a little bit. Do you guys feel vulnerable of fans of your teams that you guys are losing the stronghold that you had to begin the season? Pistons were like 2 in the East for a while there, Shannon. Now they are, you know, fighting for a playoff spot.
Yeah, they had a seven-game losing streak in there, so that certainly did not help. No, I'm very comfortable with where the Pistons are at. I mean, considering that 12 games that you guys gave me or whatever,
11. You got 11, which is ridiculous. Yeah.
Oh, it's not ridiculous. If you looked at the over-unders before the season, I was actually kind of doing you guys a favor. So, anyways, I got 11 games, which means the Pistons and Thunder, like, I'm still very confident that I'll win that bet. They're basically a similar record right now. I think the Pistons are 1 or 2 games better.
But the Pistons
I have those 11 games.
Pistons are falling much harder than the Celtics are.
They won 2 of their last 3. What are you talking about? The Pistons are on fire again.
All right.
I think I'm losing. I might be losing all of our wagers. You know, to find the 11 games, I had to dive into the wager file here. There's a Stance Sox bet over Joel Embiid playing 60 games, where Shannon has the over.
Well, it's not looking very good for me now, given he's sat multiple games since, you know, a week or two ago. We were talking about how amazing it is that he's playing so often, and since then he's
been. That's true. He sat last night, too. Yeah. And then we have because DJ doesn't like to throw big stakes, we have a milkshake wager on. Also, DJ's 16 years old. But Dennis Smith versus Lorenzo Ball. And I hate all things Lakers, so I was totally, and I hate his dad, so I was a little biased there.
So,
you have Ball, I have Smith.
Oh, well, Smith injury, who knows?
He's back, though. He's back.
Shannon will have to quantify. We'll get into that much later, or not much later, later on in the pod for certain. But that bet is looking a little more interesting than it was to begin the season, so we'll keep tabs and update everybody as that goes along.
Yes. In other news, gentlemen, Chris Paul ruled out for tonight versus the Clippers. You know, I at first was like, oh, that's too bad. It could have been kind of a revenge game, except for the Clippers don't have anyone playing that ever played with Chris Paul. I'm exaggerating a little, but they've got a pretty beat up lineup. Anyway, Paul's out with a left adductor strain. Anyway, Chris Paul, do not put in your DFS lineups tonight. Gentlemen, any thoughts on this Clippers Rockets MASH unit matchup.
I'm disappointed, obviously, right? Because for the first time in a couple of years, I mean, you know, aside from the Cavaliers, it feels like there's a real legitimate threat in the Western Conference to at least extend a series in the Western Conference Finals, if you will. So, you know, we were hoping that we would see an awesome late December matchup. That's not going to happen, and it's not meaningless, but it might as well be for who the personnel is going to be on the court. So it's a little disappointing, but let's be honest, guys. If we were running the Rockets, we'd be doing the exact same thing. There's no way to throw Chris Paul in harm's way. Harden and Paul have played excellently together when they've been on the court at the same time. There's nothing that they need to figure out necessarily. I think they've got
Paul's 32 years old.
They've got it all good to go. So, I mean, they're cruising. They're in the driver's seat in the Western Conference above the Warriors as it stands right now. And it's disappointing for the fans of the NBA. But you know what? It is a smart decision, and we just kind of got to suck it up, Shannon, and deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, he was pulled in the fourth quarter of the Tuesday or Wednesday game against the Lakers and did not return. So, you know, he's already ruled out for Friday. They're probably going to be pretty cautious with him, you know, similar to how they were earlier this year when he was injured. They were, before that Lakers game, they were undefeated with Chris Paul in the lineup for the season.
Insane.
Just insane.
Right,
absolutely insane.
Right.
So they're certainly going to just be cautious
before
with
Kuzma
him.
Blew up. Kuzma had that crazy 38-point, I think, game.
Yeah. Well, I would argue if Chris Paul played more than 25 minutes, the Rockets probably would have stayed undefeated with him in the lineup.
Yeah.
But, you know, for Friday, it just means Eric Gordon. He's
Eric
getting plucked back in the starting lineup. He was lights out when Paul was on the sidelines earlier this year. So that's who I'm targeting. Or if you've got him in a daily,
5,400 FanDuel. He's already on my little
great
picks for today. Yeah. All right, gentlemen. So don't play Chris Paul tonight. Another news from last night: Toronto beat Philadelphia. But I want to point out Dario Saric with nearly a triple double: 18 points, 10 boards, 9 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks. He's been averaging 17 points, 9. Boards and 4 assists with 2 trays made over the last 5 games while shooting 49% from the field and 92% from the line. It makes you wonder why the heck earlier in the season the Sixers had him coming off the bench. He had 5 games as a reserve. I got to check Dario's ownership, but this shouldn't be a surprise, right? The guy's rookie of the year.
Yeah, well, he was
second place.
Should have been the rookie of the year over Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting is last week, guys, we talked about what player would you like to see traded away for fantasy purposes for somebody else to either step up or get traded away to another situation where they would see more fantasy value. None of us even sniffed Dario Saric, but it's kind of an interesting one where I think if he was playing for the Suns, you know, the...
Oh. Be huge, yeah.
The Hawks or something like that, and consistently seeing 35 minutes a night like he does when Embiid is out and when some of the other counterparts of the Sixers are out. This guy's really valuable when he's on the court. It might get to a point where he says, you know, in a couple years, like, look, guys, I'm playing very, very well. I just don't want to be stuck behind, you know, somebody like Embiid or Simmons. You know, hopefully he can stay locked in to an ancillary role because they'll be a very, very good team if he's an ancillary player. But for fantasy purposes, I think we need to start lusting after Dario Saric finding a new role because he'd be a very, very good fantasy player.
I don't think you can tell
DJ's lusting because he's tripping up on his words there.
Seriously,
right?
Yeah.
I don't think we have to go that far because he's been pretty good since he was inserted back into the starting lineup, you know, in early November. He's been pretty good since then. And even, you know, even over the past 11 games, he's been averaging 17 points, 8.8 rebounds, 3.7 assists, 1.8 threes. Like, there's absolutely, he should be owned in 10, 12 team leagues. Like, there's no reason he should be on any waiver wire. He's been stellar for the past dozen games. So if he is available, pick him up without a doubt. You know, the interesting part from last night's game is the 9 assists, which was a season high. He's actually a very underrated playmaker, underrated passer. He's very good. We saw flashes of it last year when the rest of the team was injured before Ben Simmons took over this season. Saric is a damn good player and lots of fun to watch. So I'm keeping him on my team. I'm not worried about his production. Yes, it'll take a slight dip when Embiid gets back, but it's still going to have plenty of value.
Sarge owned in 77% of Yahoo League, so available in 1 out of 4, and qualifies at center in Yahoo. Yahoo's got some funny center qualifications.
Yahoo's
I should point out, pretty liberal in the center, for sure. Should point out the two blocks for Dario last night were his first blocks in the month of December. So not all of last night's stat line can be relied on, but nice to see.
All right. Let's kick it into our broader topic of the day, the meat of the podcast, if you will. Our rookie keeper rankings. Now, this only really works if we set some parameters for this gentleman. So let me do that here, and then let's continue on with the exercise under these parameters. Let's just say we're in a true keeper league where you get to keep the player for as long as that guy is in the NBA, right? And let's just go off of that standard. So we're not talking about over the next 4 years before his contract runs up in some keeper leagues like we play in and you have to extend them. Let's just say it's a true keeper league. You get to keep this player for as long as he plays in the NBA. And debate on that moving forward. Let's go around the table here. Shannon, you look like you're ready. Who's your number one?
I mean, I think we all will agree who's number one, and I think we all actually will agree on who's number two as well.
I don't know. Well, yeah, well, let's see.
Yeah, Ben Simmons is easily the top option here. He's already a top 40 fantasy player. You know, as soon as he learns how to shoot, he's going to be even better. I love everything Ben Simmons offers, and anyone who passes on Ben Simmons and picks a different rookie, I think, is foolish.
His stat line, so I put this in the last rebound and rant, his stat line is frighteningly similar to Magic Johnson's rookie year with the Lakers, the only difference being the terrible free throw shooting. He's shooting 56, 58, I got to look that up, but terrible upper 50s from the free throw line. That's really his Achilles heel. You hope he can improve on that. But everything else is Magic Johnson-like.
That's awesome. Yeah, I am not going to die on this hill at all. I completely agree that Ben Simmons is the guy in under this, you know, the format that I laid out here, that he's the one to own. And really in any other type of format, like I don't care if it's your traditional, you know, three contract year and then you have to decide to extend or whatnot. Like, he's the guy immediately right now and going forward in the future. Let's think about it, though. Yes, he does need to improve at the line, and yes, he needs to develop a jumper. But LeBron never, you know, he still isn't that great at the line. He still doesn't have the nicest of jumpers. Incredibly valuable. There's lots of instances of guys that never quite get that pure shot down. But in terms of value, he's still right there at the top for this rookie class for me.
You know, you're right, DJ. LeBron is no Nick Young from 3-point line.
Let it be known that you are the one to bring up Nick Young in this podcast while I sat aside and, you know, bit my tongue.
LeBron is only shooting a career best 41% from downtown this year.
I know. No. Hey, I'm the biggest LeBron supporter here, but I mean, we were all kind of waiting for him to have a better shot over the course of his career.
Admittedly, his free throws have been disappointing. He's at 79% career high this season.
That's awesome too. Yeah, that's awesome too. So
let's move to the number two debate.
Yeah, exactly. Ken, would you like to kick things off here?
Well, DJ, you wrote, and I think I agree with this. I especially agree with this in the next 2-3 years, which is more pertinent to actual keeper leagues. But Donovan Mitchell, Utah Jazz. And frankly, a scoring leader that they desperately need on the Jazz. So it's not just talent. It's also fantastic opportunity for Donovan Mitchell. And I know on Shannon, he's on Shannon's keeper squad in the RotoWire League.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I thought that number one was obvious, and I think the same for number two. Donovan Mitchell is having a historical rookie season. The volume of shots that he's got as a rookie, if there's like only a handful of guys who've ever seen this kind of usage as a rookie when it comes to shooting. He already has a 40-point game. That's another thing. There's only a handful of dudes who have ever scored 40 points as a rookie, especially in like the last 30 years. I mean, right now, just based on what he's done through the first 30 games, he looks like he's going to be a perennial all-star with, you know, Hall of Fame upside. by the end of his career. He just needs to stay healthy and grow from where he's at now.
So, Ken, you'll have to forgive me, but the list that I have on our notes is not actually my personal list. It's just a list that came to my head.
It's just names.
So maybe that was like a Freudian way of doing the guys I think are most valuable, but I'm actually going to slot in Jason Tatum at number two.
Oh!
Now, listen here.
You don't have to ask my forgiveness for that.
Yeah. But, okay, listen here, guys. Remember the parameters here of this
Who's
exercise.
Who's leading the league in three-point shooting? The league, not rookies. The league.
Exactly. So, Mitchell is awesome. He's great. But, like, his usage rate right now is about as high as it's ever going to be, you know, at any point in his career because he's just getting the green light. I mean, they just don't have any other scores on this team. Yeah. You have to remember that Jason Tatum will not always be on a team with Al Horford. He will not always be on a team with Kyrie Irving. Jason Tatum will be the star of his team for a good chunk of his career. And if we're looking at stat lines, purely stat lines, I don't think Mitchell is going to help you out as much as Tatum is across the board, especially when he's humming. I mean, Tatum is 19 years old. He's already getting you almost six rebounds, almost two assists, a full steal, full block, 1.53 three-pointers on 51% shooting and 83% from the line. For me, he is the clear number two over Mitchell. Mitchell's great, but he's been doing it by brute force. Tatum has done it in a specified role playing alongside two other stars.
Mitchell. It's going to be very interesting to see how Tatum does next year when Gordon Hayward comes back. I mean, I love his stats, and we're talking, DJ, you said at the beginning, it's the whole career, not just the next couple of years.
Exactly.
I have a hard time getting out of my keeper head. It's really just the next couple of years. But I don't know. Yeah, he's only 19 as well. So he's got the whole package in a rookie year. And, yeah, the steals and blocks are there that the casual fan doesn't notice. The great shot percentage from three-point range. And, frankly, he might get even more catch-and-shoot easy three-pointers when Gordon Hayward comes back. You have him six on this list. I'd have him ahead of Dennis Smith. I frankly might have him ahead of Lauri Markkanen.
Ignore those numbers. That's just a list of players.
I should have done dots instead of numbers.
One and two are the only ones that really, really mean anything. But I would actually contend Mitchell's usage rate is going to go up. Not only is his usage rate going to go up, his efficiency is going to go up. He's already an elite free throw shooter. He's hitting 84% as a rookie. He's only taken 2.5 attempts per game. Once he gets the respect of officials, and if he's chucking up 20 shots a game, he's going to start going to the line 7-8 times a game. That's going to add a good 5-6 points to his total. I mean, at his peak, he's more of a point guard than most people acknowledge. He's already getting 1.5 steals per game, 2.3 three-pointers. Like, this dude's going to be 25-5-5 with 2 steals and 2.5 threes at his peak. He's, like, absolutely elite, top 10 fantasy player. And I would easily slot him as the number two keeper.
I'm not sure you're factoring in all the Joe Ingles jumpers.
Those are assists, brothers.
I know, it's a joke. Yeah, those are assists, exactly. Those are Ingles assists.
Is it fair to say that that's the top three? Like, we can go back and forth between who's two and who's three, Tatum and Mitchell, but you're not going to slot Mitchell. I mean, did you look at Tatum's stat line?
Tatum's awesome. I love Tatum. I'm very high on
Tatum. He's doing this with Horford and Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving is a ball hog.
Listen, there's plenty of guys we haven't talked about yet who are great, have great futures. Guys who you could argue could be number one on this list that we haven't even talked about yet. Now, no, I don't have Tatum three. I have him four. Before him, I have Kyle Kuzma.
Wow.
No.
Wow.
You know, this is the problem with Kuzma and Ball is they both have huge Achilles heels. Kuzma just doesn't get any steals or blocks. Like, great scorer, but just no steals or blocks. And then Ball will just, I don't think he'll ever learn to shoot.
Shannon, I'm going to make an accusation of you right now.
Ooh.
You're a prisoner of the moment.
No.
Again, it's a tough
factor.
Exercise because we're talking about the next 15 years. But, I mean, the fact that Kuzma went out and scored 38, 25, and 20 over his last three is awesome. It's great. It's fantastic. But he hasn't done it consistently over the season yet to prove to me that he's going to do it over the course of his career.
He's averaging 17.5 points per game, 6.5 rebounds, and he just went out as a rookie and poured in 38 points. He's a perfect fit in today's NBA. Listen, I hear you. I'm not saying that the recent stretch by Kuzma hasn't influenced my decision here. A week ago, I would have absolutely said Tatum. Kuzma probably would have been 3-4 slots, if not more, further down. Hmm. But after seeing him pour in 38 points like that, the fact that he's already averaged 17.5, go back year to year and look at rookies who have scored 38 points in a game, or look at rookies who have averaged 17.5 points per game, and you're going to see elite, perennial all-star talent who's doing that as a rookie. That's why I'm high on Kuzma.
Mm. 0.3 steals a game, though. I just can't get over the utter lack of steals.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about it from a fantasy perspective, and I'm going to keep going back to Tatum, and that he's already filling it up across the board. Again, for a power forward eligible guy, I think that what Tatum brings to the table is more valuable than Mitchell, than Kuzma right now. Again, it's going to be a blast to figure this out over the next 15 years, but
it's just when we see the type of production we're seeing from Kuzma and Mitchell, those guys turn into perennial all-stars. The type of production that we see from Tatum, which is great, and Tatum is probably going to be great. He's probably going to be a perennial all-star. But that type of production you see from rookies all the time, and then they end up being the seventh man in a rotation. So, it's different. What Kuzma and Mitchell are doing is different. Could Tatum do that if given the same role as those two players? Probably. I'm not going to sell him short there. But I'm seeing it with Mitchell and Kuzma right now.
Ken, I want to set the table here.
Certainly in a typical keeper league, the opportunity for Kuzma and Mitchell the next 2-3 years is much better than Tatum's situation.
Right. Let me set the table here for you, Ken. So we've got, regardless of the order, we've got these names off the table. So we've got Simmons, Mitchell, Kuzma, and Tatum. Is there anybody of the remaining rookies that you think deserves some mentioning in that group, Ken? Or do you think that that's a solid top four? Because I think Shannon and I are willing to say that's a solid top four, and everybody right now is on the outside looking in. Is there anybody else that you think deserves mentioning within those four group?
I agree on the top four. I'll say this. I am very intrigued by the shot blocking ability of John Collins in Atlanta. So I'm curious to see. I think the rebounds and points are always going to be there. But if he gets to that kind of young Serge Ibaka block level, he could be a real gem. And talk about opportunity. That team's terrible, and he's only going to get more and more opportunity to blossom.
I'm with you, Ken. I'm super high on Collins, and I think an argument can be made that you can put him in that 5-6 range. I don't know if you would. We're still, like, there's so many guys who we haven't mentioned, like top 5, top 6, 7, 8 picks from this year's past draft that we haven't even mentioned yet, and we're already talking about Kuzma, who was end of the first round. Donovan Mitchell was, like, pick number 14, and now John Collins, another guy in that 15 range. Like, there are other dudes who were much more highly touted coming into the season that we haven't talked about. But
we haven't even said Fultz's name, though. I think his opportunity is terrible.
Lonzo Ball. We have not said Dennis Smith. You know,
Lonzo Ball can't shoot.
Well, I think those three are the next three, right?
Like, yes.
And let's look at Lonzo Ball's stats again.
You mean Ricky Rubio? Ricky Rubio?
And I'm so glad you brought that up, because if you have ever liked Rubio at any point in his career, especially from a fantasy perspective, then you should feel the exact same way about Lonzo Ball, because Lonzo Ball is honestly filling it up in the counting stats. When it comes to his percentages, he's terrible. Rubio has done the exact same thing. So in his rookie season, again, let me reiterate, his rookie season, Lonzo Ball is shooting 34% from the field, 50% from the line. Ricky Rubio, much of the same ilk over the course of his career. But again, if you were willing to tank, or if that doesn't mean as much for whatever type of league you play in, Lonzo Ball definitely deserves to be in kind of that next group of keeper league rookies that we should start talking about. Dennis Smith, Markel Fultz, probably the next three, right? And then is there anybody else that, you know, deserves mentioning, Shannon, in that second group of rookies that we're talking about right now, which just happened to all three be point guards?
Yeah, I mean, I think Ball would be the next guy I would mention. I know everyone is aware of his flaws, but what he is doing is actually, like you guys mentioned, the Ricky Rubio comp is very good. But what Ball is doing, I would argue, is more impressive than what Rubio did early in his career. I mean, Rubio's never been a volume three-point shooter like Ball already is. And yes, he's shooting 27%, but he's still hitting over a 3.5 per game. You know, there's going to be improvements with his shot. I think they're going to retool it in the offseason. He's great on defense. You know, 1.4 steals, one block per game.
Rubio had so I actually compared the two in my rebound and rant. Rubio had 2.2 steals his rookie year. Yeah, to Ball's 1.4.
Rubio's always been a really great really great at getting steals. It's the blocks that I like from Ball. It's you know, you've got some steals, not as good as Rubio, but then you're also getting blocks. But 7 rebounds, 7 assists. They're, you know, like I said, 1.5 3-pointers. The percentages are horrible. Those will improve. So, you know, even if we just see slight improvements, you know, he gets up to 42% from the floor and 34% from downtown. There's going to be improvements. And then all of a sudden he's averaging 15, 8, and 8 with, you know, 2.5 to 3 steals and blocks combined. That's a damn good fantasy player.
Rubio was a little better than from the line that I'm giving him credit for. Actually, he's been very good at the line. However, Ball gets the edge when it comes to blocks, like you said, Shannon, by a wide margin. So by a wide margin, Rubio gets the nod in free throw percentage, but by a wide margin, Ball gets it in blocks, you know, resulting in a very similar type of fantasy player because you're just destroyed in field goal percentage from both of those guys.
But it's obvious. I think you guys would agree. It's obvious that Ball's upside is well beyond what Rubio has produced so far.
Yeah, I think right now.
I mean,
at this point, Rubio is what he is, and the Ball has the chance of improving his shot. But Rubio also proves that you can't just assume everybody's going to shoot better. I'd point it. Look at Terry Rozier or Marcus Smart. Those guys are still shooting upper 30s when it was just assumed they'd learn how to shoot at the NBA level. It doesn't. You just can't assume it's going to happen.
An argument could be made for Ball being number one on this list, and I'm not trying to throw out a hot take. But let's say you don't believe Simmons will ever be able to have a good jump shot. He never develops that, but you believe Ball will, then you could easily argue that Ball has the highest upside of any of these guys. So it's we are, you know, not too encouraged by what we've seen from Ball, but there's still, you know, his shooting's bad, but there's so much else that there that holds value in fantasy.
All right, so that concludes group number two, since we have kind of organically started to go group by group. So as a reminder, group two was Dennis Smith, Lonzo Ball, Markelle Fultz. Fultz is still a really good player. Obviously, we have to wait, but, you know, there's still a lot to like about him. We don't need to get into it because we just haven't seen any tape on him, but he still is deserving of being in that group two because, again, we're talking about the whole course of his career. Group number three, gentlemen, I think the only one that I'm willing to say definitely deserves to be in this next group is Lauri Markkanen. He has surprised me. He was not a good rebounder in college, and he has come to the NBA and has actually been a better rebounder in the NBA than he was in college. So that just kind of says a lot about the scheming that was going on in Arizona, perhaps more than Markkanen's ability to rebound. He's at 7.7, which is perfectly acceptable for a rookie who is power forward eligible and extends the court from beyond the line. Shannon, who's another player that deserves to be in that Markkanen group in the group three?
Yeah, I mean, in this third group, I agree. Markkanen, you could actually argue Markkanen should be 4 or 5 on the list. I think you could do the same with John Collins, De'Aaron Fox. These guys, like Collins and Markkanen, have shown a lot. And if they were unleashed for 32 minutes per game and they have their natural progression, you know, as second and third and fourth year players, you know, they could easily be top five keepers of this entire group. You could have them above Lonzo Ball and Fultz and Smith. So I love all of those guys. Long term, I think they have great potential. I actually like Collins a little bit more than Markkanen, but I also think they're both going to be top 50 fantasy players once they hit their prime.
So I agree that right now Collins deserves to be in this third group. I'm not totally convinced, like I am for Markkanen, that... And Fox, what I've seen out of Markkanen and Fox leads me to believe that they're going to be, you know, valuable over the course of their careers. I'm not so certain that when Collins starts getting better players around him, that he, you know, could potentially be phased out of a rotation or to the back end of a rotation. But right now, again, you know, I feel like I'm a prisoner to the moment because I really don't know. I don't feel like I have enough tape to judge him on, you know, where does he actually stack up in, you know, an above average NBA team. But right now, you know, I'm fully willing to put him in that third group. De'Aaron Fox is...
Well, and he also missed a decent chunk of time to injury,
exactly.
too. So shorter time to watch him.
Yeah, so I think deserving of group three, but if he were to fall out over the course of his career to the back end of a rotation, like a Trevor Booker guy or something like that, Kylo Quinn, it wouldn't terribly surprise me. De'Aaron Fox, I have liked a lot. That guy is just a lightning bolt on the court. I think when he starts to figure things out and he can start to strategically use his speed instead of just like, you know, using it with brute force, he'll be very interesting, Shannon.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt this, Ken, but is Sacramento just a career killer? Like, is he ever going to get the coaching and atmosphere that a rookie needs? You know, are we ever going to see a rookie out of Sacramento? I guess you could say Boogie Cousins, of course, but I feel like that's in some ways just dooms. It's like getting drafted by the Browns.
Well, I think exactly like that.
Yeah, but we're only 30 games in. We're going to see things change. George Hill isn't happy in Sacramento. I think that roster, there's going to be some roster
change.
Why
did George Hill sign in Sacramento?
Why did Sacramento
that made no
sign
sense
George
to me.
Hill? It doesn't make sense right. for either side.
Why did he? Right? Well, I actually get Sacramento doing it. They're like, good locker room guy, can coach the youngsters. We desperately need some leadership on this roster. But if you're George Hill and you've had experience in Sacramento and other quality organizations, why you want to spend time in Sacramento is utterly beyond me.
I agree. But I'm not going to give up on De'Aaron Fox. I think he's going to have long-term fantasy potential. I think we'll see it in the back half of this season because I do think that roster is going to change for the Kings somewhat. You know, whether that means George Hill's out, I don't know. But I think there's going to be some changes there. And we'll just see natural growth. I think, you know, the kid's only 20. So there's some rawness to his game, but I think we're going to see improvements. One thing I want to mention about John Collins is he has a higher PER than any of the guys we've talked about today. Wow. Any of them. He leads rookies in PER with 21.14. You do need to watch more tape, DJ, because I think he's totally legit. If they unleashed him for 30 minutes a game this season, he would be at like 15 and 12 with 2 blocks per game this year. He's an athletic freak. I think he's really good around the basket.
60% for the field helps.
Yeah. I'm super excited. I mean, he's not the stretch big man that you see a lot, you know, right. with a lot of these guys. But he's athletic and he can, I think his upside's pretty high.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I just wonder with the type of player he is, you know, can he find his way to significant minutes over the course of his career for the type of player he is, where the league is trending, and given that we've only seen so little of him on a team with, you know, frankly, not many good players at all, that's the one question mark I have. But again, I think he should be in that third group. Now, I don't even want to do groups anymore, guys. I just want to read off the rest of the names, and you tell me, just, you know, mention one or two of these guys that you would pick over basically the litter here. So let me list them off, and then Ken, I'll come to you with the player that you, if you could pick out of this group, who you would want for the rest of their career. Get ready. Strap in here. Josh Jackson, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Malik Monk, Frankie Smokes, Jordan Bell, Jonathan Isaac, Dylan Brooks, Zach Collins, OG Anunoby, TJ Leaf, and DJ Wilson.
None of them super excite me, but I think...
Your silence is perfect, Ken. Say no more. That is perfectly fine. The big shocks here, right, Shannon, would be Josh Jackson for sure, Malik Monk for sure. A lot of people, when we did our roundtable article, I think a lot of people thought that Malik Monk was going to have the season that Donovan Mitchell is having right now, where he could light it up, catch on fire. That has not happened. Travion Graham and MCW has seen more minutes and more value from Coach Steve Clifford. Jonathan Isaac.
Because the future is MCW.
Right. It's just insane. So it's really damning for Malik Monk so far.
I mean, the problem is you can't have him and Kemba Walker on the court at the same time, essentially. Like,
sure.
That Clifford's already said as much. Like, we can't have him be a shooting guard because he can't play defense. He can't guard shooting guards.
That's the case with many rookies. So, Shannon, if I kick that question to you, let me guess. I would say Isaac or Frankie Smokes?
No. It's Josh Jackson. All right?
Okay.
Now, Josh Jackson has had a historically bad rookie season. He has a usage rate of only over 20. Of the, like, 120 NBA players who have that usage rate, none have a true shooting percentage lower than Josh Jackson. He's been really bad, and it's to be determined how well he fits in today's NBA, because he's one of those guys who can play like basically four positions, but he also can't hit three-pointers yet. He's not great from the free throw line. He takes a lot of bad shots. He forces things. So I just think with,
you know, the Suns are kind of get one of those lineups like the Magic where everyone's a tweener, but no one's good at a particular position.
Right. Yep. Exactly.
But I'm willing to give Jackson some credit here based on his talent. I mean, his skill level made a lot of people peg him as the top talent in the NBA draft this past season. He dropped to four to the Suns. He needs time. So that's why he's not up. I mean, preseason, we would have had him top five on this list. So now we have him like not even cracking the top 10. We have him, he's going to end up being like 11, 12, 13, 14, depending on your belief in his long-term viability. I still believe there's going to be something there. It's just going to take longer than what we'd hope for it to develop.
Yeah, I think that's a great breakdown. You take Josh Jackson over the others because of where not only us as a fantasy community, but the NBA itself had Josh Jackson only, what, 4 months ago? So just going off of that, you'd rather take your chances, and I totally understand that with him over, you know, any of these other guys who haven't really shown it on the court, right, and they never showed it at any point during their collegiate or overseas career.
You know, you talk about a team that could use a George Hill. Obviously, the Suns aren't going anywhere, but need, like, someone, a veteran who could teach the rest of the young players on that team. George Hill seems like a much better fit and a little more of a true point guard relative to the other guards they've got in Phoenix.
George Hill needs to go back to the Spurs and be their starting point guard for the rest of the season.
Well,
yeah, that would be great too. Yeah.
That would be awesome. But you know what? Ken, they do have that guy. It's Jared Dudley, and he's about as good as it gets from a mentor of a young team. I mean, Jared Dudley is the man when it comes to that, and that's why he's on an NBA roster, purely for that reason.
Yeah, but he can't run the point. Like, I mean,
no, I know, Hill, not on the court, but just on off the courts, right, and, you know, kind of corralling guys, making sure they, you know, leave establishments at a certain time every night. Jared Dudley is that guy for sure.
I mean, I feel like, you know, one of the big misses of the process was, and Jerry Bayless for about 2 days was supposed to be that guy, but they never had a point guard. When you're young in the NBA, you don't need an amazing point guard, but you need a decent NBA point guard who can set you up for shots. If you're always having to create your shots as a rookie, that's just kind of a recipe for being lost. And I look at like the utter lack of a point guard in the Sixers the last few years, the mess at point guard in Phoenix for crazy reasons, right? I just think,
well, let's
no
think
wonder
of all
no
the
your
point guards they had Goran Dragic, yeah, they had Eric Bledsoe, they had Brandon, right, Knight, they had Isaiah Thomas. I mean, they could have, you know, like all
those are a pretty good point guards.
Been, yeah, they had many, many options to choose from. I think Brandon Knight is that guy, and Eric Bledsoe was supposed to be that guy, Ken. I think you're right, and they knew that. The Sixers did not, though. That's a really interesting philosophy, because for the duration of that, maybe they should have had somebody like a Jared Bayless there the whole time during the process.
Nah, it's worked out perfectly for the Sixers, though, because they have Ben Simmons running point, and the veteran guy is Redick. So the Sixers are fine. They weren't ready last year anyways, or the year before, but they have that veteran guy now, and they're ready to make that leap. So I think timing's worked out well for them. For the Suns, I think the offense is going to run through Booker, and he's the de facto point guard. What they really need at point is someone who can hit threes and stretch the floor, because right now Booker's the only guy who's in the starting lineup that hits threes. I mean, if you have a three-point shooter at point, then you can have Booker and him, but that both stretch floor, and you can afford to play Josh Jackson at the three. But right now, I mean, Josh Jackson's just another guy who can't hit threes.
Ken, it's going to be your time to shine in about 30 seconds, but let me recap what we just talked about here. In group one for rookie keeper rankings, clearly Ben Simmons is number one. Joining him in that group one, though, is Donovan Mitchell, Kyle Kuzma, Jason Tatum. Listener, you decide what order you want. We gave us our takes. In that next group two, all three point guards, Dennis Smith, Lonzo Ball, Markelle Fultz. Group three, Lauri Markkanen, John Collins, and De'Aaron Fox. Of the rest, we seem to agree that Josh Jackson would be the one to take the flyer on, but who's to say over the course of all those guys' career? Ken, why don't you give us your crazy old man rant?
I have a holiday rant and revelation. The rant, I hate Christmas music in November, And the reason I hate it is because now it's not even Christmas yet, and I'm tired of Christmas music. Hate all you evil retailers and people who play Christmas music in November. It's not giving Thanksgiving the recognition deserves. Makes me super angry. But, you know, here's a happy old man Ken revelation. And I want you two to seriously give this a try. Make your own eggnog. My daughter and wife found some crazy recipe where you heat up eggs and milk and you strain it and you add stuff. And I don't know what they did. They made their own eggnog. Of course, the daughter's not putting alcohol in her eggnog, but it was awesome. You have to let it sit overnight. I don't know what, you know, I think Epicurious or something. But try making your own eggnog. It's 1,000 times better than the garbage in the pre-mixed cartons.
I had homemade eggnog this past weekend. I was at a party, and they made it. It was pretty awesome. Thick. Not as thick as the stuff you buy. But yeah, Ken, I'm with you. Whatever. I'm not going to get into too much. We definitely get our Christmas music when it's
awesome. I'll also say bourbon over rum. Bourbon over rum.
There you go. It's time, though, for a special edition of Crazy Old Man Rant, where Shannon, the junior old man on this podcast trio, would like to try his hand at ranting about something he has found displeasure in society today. Shannon, take it away.
Today's NBA's assists are fake. I can't take it anymore. You see all these guys like LeBron and Lonzo Ball and Ben Simmons rack up these impressive assist stat lines, and it's all fake as hell. These guys, they throw a pass, their teammate catches it, does 5 pump fakes, dribbles the ball 8 times, and then scores, and they credit that player with an assist. It's mind-blowing to me. If you have to do anything after catching the ball, if you have to dribble it, if you have to dribble, if you have to do 10 head fakes, make a bunch of post moves, it's not an assist. The assist should lead directly to a bucket, not some other action before the bucket. I mean, LeBron's assist rate this season is at a career high. It's like 41%, and it's been a huge jump the past 2 years. You can look at other assist rates throughout the NBA. There's been a huge jump. People have done studies on this before, and sometimes the trend, it's certainly gone up somewhat, but all you got to do is watch the tape. Watch the damn tape. Go look at assists in today's NBAs. It's even the same thing happens in college where you got that kid. Who's the kid on Oklahoma? The Steph Curry 2.0.
Buddy Hield?
No.
This year?
Current
I have
college
no year. Idea.
Trey somebody, all right?
Okay.
Trey Young or whatever his name is. He had 22 assists the other day. But like
22?
22 assists.
Oh my
like
gosh.
Tied a college record. 22 assists for the Sooners. And like 5 of them, I would say, weren't assists. Mm. At least 5. So it just blows my mind. I wish it were back like it was in the 80s, where if you only get the assist if you catch it and score. You know, it could be 1 or 2 steps to the hoop. If it's on a fast break, that's fine. But all this business about dribbling around and then getting credit for assists, screw that.
Ken, you better have a tight grip on your old man rocker. This guy's coming for it. These guys talked about stuff they don't like, but I'm going to tell
you. Trey Young at Oklahoma.
There you go.
But yes. I'm running out of good rants, so I'm more than happy to have some help at the rant. And Shannon's pretty close to my oldness, so yeah.
They're going to start rewarding hockey assists in the NBA.
Yeah.
They might.
Oh, God.
Right. Sadly, you know, so I also covered this in the rant because Shannon and I he was complaining to me, texting me about bad assists, and there was an article on Deadspin about it. The official NBA assist definition, I really thought it would mention something about whether or not the scorer dribbles or not. But actually, in the official definition, it's just if you help someone else score.
It's open
it does
for
not,
interpretation.
Yeah.
It's way open for way too much interpretation. And it seems like, okay, I get like that one little quickie dribble while you pause to having a defender fly by you. But more than one dribble, that's just crazy to have that counted as an assist.
It is interesting. All right, we're done talking about stuff we don't like. Let's talk about stuff we definitely, definitely like. Let's kick it off by talking about FanDuel, the fantasy basketball for everyday fans. New contest starting every day. That means no busted seasons. There's something for everyone. Lots of contests to choose from starting at just $1. All you do is pick a contest, select your players, and watch your score in real time. We love FanDuel so much. We're going to devote the whole next segment talking about our Friday FanDuel picks. We're thrilled three of over 2.5 million players that have won a cash prize playing on FanDuel. To take advantage of our special offer for new users, sign up today at FanDuel.com/RW. You'll get a free 6-month RotoWire subscription with your first deposit on FanDuel. Just visit FanDuel.com/RW. Void where prohibited. Guys, I want to kick things off on our Friday FanDuel picks with a question, and I'll kick it off to Shannon. I know that you, Shannon, have been using Kevin Durant readily since Steph Curry has been out of the lineup. Most recently, he went over to Memphis. We paid a bunch of money for him, and he did not perform in that 70 FanDuel point range like he had been previously. But Curry won't be playing tonight. They're going to have another depleted squad, it seems like. Do you think Kevin Durant can bounce back and give us another 60-plus, 70-plus FanDuel outing tonight? Or should we look elsewhere?
No, I'm riding Durant tonight. I think he bounces back. I mean, one, the game against...
Revenge game.
Revenge game against the Lakers. I mean, he just posted 71 fantasy points against the Lakers a few days ago. That was right before the Memphis game. We knew the Memphis game was going to be slower paced anyways. The only thing I'm watching with Kevin Durant is if Draymond Green returns.
Yeah.
That makes me on him a little bit less. I don't know if I'll move off of him completely.
I think if Green returns, though, he sees 20 or less minutes. They're not going to shove him in there for a full. They've been super conservative with him.
Yeah, that's certainly a possibility. I think it depends on how competitive a game it is as well. I mean, the Lakers... They're hit or miss. They have been pretty competitive this season against good teams, but this game is in Golden State, so I think it's going to be a pretty easy win for the Warriors. But yeah, I like Durant tonight. As long as Curry's out, he's a solid play.
All right, we already talked about Eric Gordon, $5,400 going up against the Clippers. No Paul, and of course the Clippers have been banged up. Ken, who's your other pick? I know you already had Gordon, but I see you have another pick here for us.
Yeah, I'm going back to the well on Kelly Oubre, Otto Porter game time decision. So if Porter is healthy, you go, I might make a change. But as of right now, Oubre at 4,400 against the fast paced Brooklyn Nets. Maybe I'm a broken record on pushing people in the Nets games, but Oubre at 4,400 sure lets you afford guys like a Kevin Durant. I can even get John Wall as my point guard if I put Oubre at small forward.
Now, I've got a question for you, DJ.
Right.
We've been on another team that's been dealing with injuries. So Aaron Gordon and Fournier are both doubtful for tonight's game. Are you going back to the well? Or are you hitting up those Magic players again?
Jonathan Simmons would be the guy that I go to. Vucevic as well. Although his price tag, let me check it real quick.
If 90, it's
9,900. So it has actually stayed where it was last time all those guys were hurt, and it rose to that amount. So I don't know, like, if it had dipped back down after those guys returned for a couple games, I might be interested. But I think Simmons is the clear winner here, although Vucevic certainly did show us that with the other guys off the court, he, you know, his usage rate is going to go crazy high. Simmons is the one I feel most confident about, then Vucevic, then Elfrid Payton, and I barely feel confident about Elfrid Payton.
Yeah, I mean, I've got Vooch in my lineup. It's going to be – they're going up against Pelicans. It's the second highest over-under for the night. So it's going to be a high-scoring game. Love Vooch, even at that price. He actually went above 10K earlier this week, so he's dipped a little bit.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, but, you know, I love Vucevic, and usually he can have his way with opposing defenders. But he's looking across the way at Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins, and that intimidates me away from Vucevic a lot.
Yeah,
does it
especially as the second most expensive center in the night.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't scare me away from him. I haven't dived into the data for opposing centers against the Pelicans, but that's something I'll look at.
I'll do that now. Yeah.
You know, I also like Hezonja. He's 4,400. He jumped up over 5,000 after one of his big games, but he's posted 2 40-point efforts in scenarios like we'll see tonight. You know, assuming Fournier and Gordon are both out, he's going to get 25 to 30 minutes. And it depends. It depends if his shot's falling, whether or not he's going to hit a high point total. But the upside's there.
You guys, I just committed a a rookie mistake when it comes to analyzing fantasy lineups and daily fantasy lineups, because I went off of name recognition without actually looking at the stats. And so you think of Anthony Davis, you think of DeMarcus Cousins, and it's like, wow, stay away, stay away. Actually, so far this season, the Pelicans are one of the worst teams when it comes to giving up fantasy points to the center position. In fact, let's see, where did they go? I lost them. Their bottom half, depending if you're playing, you know, depending on what type of site you're playing on, they definitely are bottom half in the league. And on some sites, they're actually the second worst.
Yeah, the past five games, we show them as the fourth worst against opposing centers. So I'm not that worried. I know that Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins rack up stats and blocks, but that doesn't mean that they're great at stopping opposing centers from racking up fantasy points.
All right, gentlemen, I think that's going to conclude it. Best of luck to all of you out there playing on FanDuel tonight. And thanks so much for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Basketball Podcast presented by FanDuel. Ken, why don't you get us out of here?
Yeah, first of all, my beautiful bride heard my rant and just handed me a huge beer stein full of eggnog with bourbon. God bless America. Number two, we're going to go old school here. Gene Shue. You guys remember Gene Shue? One of the worst haircuts in the NBA. Player and coach. Coached the Bullets. I don't know what team he was complaining about here, but one day he said, probably in the mid-80s, the way my team is going, we could get Wilt Chamberlain in a trade and find out he's really two midgets scotch taped together. Attention, passengers! This three-car fantasy train has hit the end of the line!